Vayak hail Moshe et kol adat b'nei Yisrael vayomer alehem eile hadivorim asher tivo Hashem la'asot otam.
OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayakhel, which we read by itself this week, next week being both Pekudei and Shekalim. Pekudei is often combined with Vayakhel Pekudei, with Vayakhel, to form Vayakhel Pekudei, not as often as you might think. The frequency is around 60% of the time it is combined, and a little over 40% it is separate. That's the story, but not the whole story. We'll tell you more as the show progresses. Recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 20th of Adar Rishon, the first Adar, 20th, in the year 5771, on the secular calendar, the 24th of February. Yesterday, the 19th, was my mother's Yahrzeit. May she rest in peace, 13 years. And it just brings to mind an early story of Torah Tidbits Audio, which I will share again with the listenership, because it was only a few months into my tenure of Torah Tidbits Audio that my mother passed away. She was in Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. I spent all of Monday night with her. And at 9 o'clock in the morning, my brother and sister-in-law relieved me with my mother so that I could come back to the Israel Center, where I was meeting a technician from Arut Sheva to record Torah Tidbits Audio. In those days, an actual technician with actual taping equipment came, and that's how we did the show. The show at that time was on Wednesday night on Arut Sheva. It subsequently moved to Thursday and then moved into the internet. But in those days, it was on the radio Wednesday night. This was Tuesday morning recording. When I finished the show, I was told to go back to the hospital. People here were informed that my mother had passed away, but they didn't want to interrupt me during the recording. Okay. The funeral was Tuesday, and I called the head of the station and told him that before he puts the show on Wednesday night, to just announce that since the recording, my mother had passed away and that I was sitting Shiva, but the recording was made from before she had passed away, in the idea of the show must go on. Apparently, God had other plans, because his attitude is, the show doesn't have to go on. If you're sitting Shiva, then you shouldn't be broadcasting a show, even if it's pre-recorded. How do I know this? This was March, after Purim. It was a regular Adar year that year. And there was a freak storm with thunder and lightning and a hefty dump of snow in Yerushalayim, and such heavy rains and storm conditions out at sea, where the ship from which Arut Sheva was broadcast into Israel, the ship that was 12 miles or 12 kilometers off the coast in order to comply with the regulations, had to be brought into port, and that night, very uncharacteristically, there was no Arut Sheva broadcasting at all. and that included my show. So that's a show from the early years of Torah Tidbits Audio that never was aired. I happen to have a copy of it someplace on cassette, remember those? And maybe someday I'll put it onto MP3 and listen to what it was sounded like in those days. But those are the memories vis-a-vis Torah Tidbits Audio that were conjured up by my observance of my mother's Yahrzeit yesterday. And just for those who are interested, a Yahrzeit of a death in a regular Adar, as I've mentioned already in the last couple of weeks, is, according to the author of Shulchan Aruch, who Sfardim and Eidot Mizrach follow, is observed in the second Adar, according to the Ramah, Rav Moshe Iskalis, a major Ashkenazi authority. It's to be observed in the first Adar, and according to the Vilna Gaon and others, it really should be observed in both. Which raises a question, or sort of answers a question, of what do we mean when we say there are two Adars? Is there a regular Adar and an added month, which we happen to call Adar whatever? Or is it two Adars? You're seeing double. Now the Mishnah says, Ein bein Adar Rishon la'Adar Sheni. There is no difference between the first Adar and the second Adar, except for the reading of Megillah and the giving of gifts to the poor, and commentaries add everything else that has to do with Purim, which sort of covers just about everything. In other words, Parshat Shkalim, Parshat Zohar, Parshat Parah, Parshat HaChodesh, all are in the second Adar and not in the first. Purim, Shushan Purim, Tanit Esther before, are in the second Adar, not in the first. In the first, you're left with a pale shadow of the Purim that might have been there, and it manifests itself by not having eulogies at a funeral, not fasting on those days, not saying Tachanun, not saying Lam Natseach. This year, Shushan Purim Katan was on Shabbat, so we didn't say Av Harachamim, and we don't say Tzidchatcha at Mincha. But that's about it. So, in the concept as expressed by the Vilna Gaon, I'm not saying this is his argument, it's mine, based on his recommendation to observe both days as Yahrzeit. You're talking about a double month of Adar. There are two of them. And anything that goes in the first goes in the second. Anything in the second goes in the first. There are two. And that would cover everything except anything that has to do with Purim, which of course is the bulk of the things. That's the irony of it. But that's based on the Megillah's insistence that Purim be observed each year in the way it's always observed year by year, b'chol shana v'shana. So if on a one Adar year you have one Purim, in a two Adar year you also have one Purim, because of that statement in the Megillah. The question then is, which Adar? And there happens to be a dispute. Some authorities felt it should be in the first, right after Shvat. That would make it normal. And others say it should be in the second Adar because that's right before Nisan, and that would make it normal. And we follow that opinion that all Purim-related stuff is moved to the second Adar, or is in the second Adar, however you want to say it. But something like a Yahrzeit that has nothing to do with Purim, you can apply the concept of there is no difference between the first Adar and the second Adar. And therefore, my brothers and I, 13 years ago, really 12 years ago, decided that we would follow that opinion that says you hold both the 19th of each Adar as a Yahrzeit, and that's what we do. We, with half of a smile, say how ironic it is that we end up fasting, which is a custom that many people have on the Yahrzeit of a parent, twice in some years for my mother, but my father, Zichrono Livracha, who passed away on the second candle of Hanukkah, we don't fast at all any Yahrzeit. So, on balance, we're still with fewer fasts than we would have. And that's basically the story. All of this was said in memory, fond memory, loving memory of my parents, especially my mother, whose Yahrzeit was yesterday, and now we could move on to the next order of business, which is Tehillim Kuf Lamed Psalm 130. Shir HaMa'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shema V'Koli Tehiena Aznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai. Im Avonot Tishmor Yah Adonai Mi Ya'amod Ki Imacha Hasalicha L'Ma'an Tivare. Ki Viti Adonai Kiveta Nafshi V'Lidvaro Hochalti. Nafshi L'Adonai Mi Shomerim L'Boker Shomerim L'Boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifdeh et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha umeyafela l'ora umishibud l'gu'ula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. Now, usually, I would take the recording of a shiur I gave to the folders, either today, Thursday, or yesterday, Wednesday, and sometimes both, and let that be the bulk of the show. I happen to have a recording from yesterday, and it's not just of a mini shiur, it's of a new thought that has percolated in my mind, and I expressed it for the first time in this recording. And I definitely am going to play it, but it's not the best way to start Parshat Vayakhel. So I will hold it for later in the show. And instead, I would like to start now giving a little overview of Parshat Vayakhel. It's fairly simple to diagram it, but very significant. You heard in the opening of the show the first verse, which was Moshe gathered all of the community of Israel, and said to them, Ela hadvarim, these are the things that God commanded you to do. It continues, 6 days work shall be done, and on the seventh day it will be for you a Shabbat supreme, Shabbat Shabbaton to God. Anyone who does milacha, the forbidden types of activities, yumat, shall die. Then the verse says, Lo tiva'aru esh b'chol moshvotechem b'yom ha-shabbat, you shall not kindle fire in any of your dwellings on the Sabbath day. Before we get to that last verse, let's go back on mot yumat, or yumat. Shabbat violations, Shabbat desecration for a Jew, carries with it a death penalty, either by heaven or by human courts when we have them, depending upon how public the act of desecration was, the warning of witnesses, and the arrogant refusal to abstain from certain activities. Not included as a death penalty, I think it's important for me to point out, are the people who violate Shabbat because they never learned how to keep Shabbat properly. They didn't grow up that way. They weren't properly educated in the value and beauty of Shabbat. And they are non-Shabbos observers, not as an informed decision and choice, which, by the way, has to be the answer to the witnesses in the time of Sanhedrin. We're talking now not about the Supreme Sanhedrin of 71 that sat in Jerusalem. We're talking about what we could call the minor Sanhedrins of 23 judges whose authority included capital and corporal punishment cases in the various major cities and big towns around the country. Now, case in point, a person who is publicly, again, we're talking about a time, past and future, when you have full education, full infrastructure for proper Torah observance, and you have someone who's not just a closet Shabbat violator, but someone who arrogantly brings it into the public of a basically Shabbat observant public, and flaunts the desecration of Shabbat. To the point where when witnesses say to him, you're not allowed to do that on Shabbat, it is forbidden by Torah law and carries with it a possible death penalty, and the person looks the witnesses in the eye and says, I don't care, I'm doing it anyway. Af al pi chein, notwithstanding what you said, I heard you, and I'm scornfully, and I use the word again, arrogantly, disregarding your warning. That's a person who not only threatens the relationship of himself to God, but also attacks a very important aspect of Jewish society. We now live in a time, even where there are a lot of religious people, where the majority of Jews do not observe Shabbat. Most don't necessarily flaunt it, and don't necessarily do it scornfully or arrogantly. They just don't keep Shabbat. I don't think that we need to apply the Torah's warning of you shall die to those kind of people. I don't mean by this to minimize the significance of Shabbat and the severity of its punishment. I'm just trying to point out that it needs a lot more than we have today to hold a person accountable on that level. Aside from that, Lo tava'aru esh, you shall not kindle fire. This is a prohibition for Shabbat. And there are two, not offshoots of this, but two directions that comment can be made. Emphasis on Lo tava'aru esh b'chol moshvoteichem, in all of your dwelling places, but in the dwelling, the sanctuary, the temple, the mikdash, the mishkan, God's dwelling place, so to speak, there, fire was allowed to be kindled when it was required, like the lighting of the menorah, and like tending the altar for the necessary korbanot. So that's one direction. Without going into too much detail there, it's a fact that in the Beit HaMikdash, certain things were done on Shabbat, that for us to do them in our own community, our own home, for our own purposes, would be absolutely forbidden. The other direction comment could be made is that of Shabbat candles. Because of the prohibition of kindling fire on Shabbat, our sages commanded as a mitzvah the lighting of candles in honor of Shabbat and for the purpose of oneg, enjoyment of Shabbat. There are three possibilities. You want light in your home on Friday night. You either violate Shabbat and turn on the light, or you sit in the dark, or you do what you're supposed to, which is not only to light candles before Shabbat, but to see to it that the light is on where you want it to be on. It's on a clock where you want it to be on and then go off at a certain time and back on at a different time. And in other words, you provide from your Friday to take care of the Shabbat day, which has its restriction. Kindling fire is not the only example of this. If cooking and baking are also forbidden on Shabbat, which they are, then one has three possibilities. Well, you want schnitzel on Friday night. You either desecrate the Shabbat and you fry your schnitzel on Friday night. Not allowed to do that. Or you do without it. Don't have to do that either. You can prepare it on Friday and keep it warm and even warm it up in certain halachically acceptable ways on Shabbat, and that's what you're supposed to do. Enough said on this. I would like to start that recording because there's a point that I really, really want to share with you. I want to share with you an idea which, because I write Torah Tidbits all the time, I spend a lot of time in the week, any week, thinking and working with the Parsha and the calendar and ideas, and especially in the lead tidbit to come up with a new angle. I have an idea which hit me very, very strongly. I am bubbling over with enthusiasm to share it with you. It'll take a little while to get there. I saw a TV show, one of the law shows, maybe L.A. Law, I'm not sure which, maybe it was another one. Very interesting story about a couple who were both deaf, and they had a daughter who was now 17 years old, and she also was deaf. And the daughter found out at a doctor's visit, a checkup, that she would be a good candidate for a cochlear implant, which would give her hearing. But because she was 17, meaning not 18 yet, she needed her parents' permission for this operation. The parents refused. And she was devastated because this dream of being able to hear was something she grew up with. And she was shocked that her parents would refuse. She went to a lawyer, and the lawyer called the parents in for a conference. So here are the parents, both deaf, the girl deaf, the lawyer, and I think they had a sign language expert with them for translating. And the parents say the following: we belong to a community of deaf people. All of us, including our daughter, have learned to cope with our handicap to the point where we don't see it as a handicap anymore. We have a different life, not a handicapped life. We have a different life from hearing people. We have different values. Our other senses have been heightened because of our deficiency in hearing. And we have a very happy, comfortable way of life.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio, and hopefully we'll continue to listen. We just started the recording of a mini shiur that I gave to the Torah Tidbits folders yesterday on Wednesday. I had started with two mishnayot in memory of my mother. If we have time, we'll take a look at least at one of those. And I would like to continue now with the rest of this thought, which has very much enthused me to share with others. I shared it first with that group. I share it now with the listenership of Torah Tidbits Audio.
And we have a very happy, comfortable way of life, which we don't want our daughter to leave. We want her to be part of our community. If she becomes a hearing person, we're going to lose her. That was their argument. I don't remember. I think at the end they gave in, and she had the operation, and they hugged and kissed, whatever. That's not the point. Here's my point. It made me think about people who have no choice, that they can't hear, there's nothing that could be done. Blind people who can't see, and there's nothing to be done. A blind person who can have an operation, hopefully will get one, and hopefully will have some sight restored. And more technology every day helps overcome these things. I realize the following. We meaning the Jewish people, we have two very precious gifts that we received from God. They are the Torah of Israel and the land of Israel. And I put them in the same sentence because the Torah repeatedly does that. All the mitzvot that I have commanded you this day you shall do in order to be fruitful, multiply, go in, conquer, and settle the land which God has promised. God says to Moshe at the burning bush, I am going down into that land to take the people out, to bring them to a land flowing with milk and honey. Eretz Yisrael is part of God's plan for the Jewish people as much as Torah. But because of exile, which we brought about on ourselves, we lost Eretz Yisrael at different times in Jewish history, like a person losing his hearing or his sight. We still had Torah. Torah we took into exile, and Torah was actually heightened in our life because we didn't have Eretz Yisrael. Mitzvot and the infrastructure of mitzvot in a community became so important because we were facing losing our identity, and therefore Jewish communities sprung up all over the world, some in more healthy places than others, but with such a force from the people there and such a pride. The people, I actually heard this with my own ears. I criticize it, but I understand it a little better now, and I still don't agree with it. Quote, we have everything we need. Everything we need for a complete Jewish life in Muncie, Woodmere, the Five Towns, Borough Park, Crown Heights, Golders Green in London, whatever. I said to some of these people, what do you mean everything? Everything. Shuls coming, every shul packed. You could have your choice of a big shul, a small shul, a Hasidish shul, a Nusach Sfar, Nusach Ashkenaz, Nusach Ari, whatever. Schools, you wouldn't believe how many schools there are and all different kind of things. Shiurim, yeah. Daf Yomi, any time of day. Hebrew, English, or Yiddish. Etc., etc. I actually heard it like this. We even have a 24-hour-a-day Shomer Shabbos Dunkin' Donuts store. And we have a Galat Kosher Japanese restaurant. We have everything we need. I said, everything, what about Eretz Yisrael? So he said, what about Eretz Yisrael? That got me annoyed. So what do you mean, what about Eretz Yisrael? You just had the arrogant statement that you have everything you need for a complete Jewish life. What about the Eretz Yisrael component of a Jewish life? Oh, well, not that, but I visit. You look at my passport, 35 different entry stamps and exit stamps. I said, you look at my passport, you won't see that many. But if you look at my ticket, this is when I was there, my return ticket goes to Tel Aviv. Your return ticket says JFK. There's the difference. It reminds me of those parents who said, handicap? Not having hearing? We have created a life which they actually believed was better than a hearing life. Why do you need to hear junk and garbage and gossip and lashon hara and vulgarity when this way It's in a much more beautiful environment. Maybe so. But you have to admit you're missing your hearing. Because there are things you could do which you can't do without it. And if not that, then sight, or use any example you want. Why am I saying all of this now? I could say it any time. You look at the Sedra this week, Vayakhel, you will find three psukim out of 122 that talk about Shabbat. You will find 119 psukim out of 122 that talk about Mikdash, the Mishkan, the sanctuary, the tabernacle. 119 psukim on Mikdash, 3 psukim on Shabbat. Yet, last week's Sedra, the Torah made it very clear. Ach et Shabtotai tishmoru. Yes, you're going to build a Mishkan. And it's a holy endeavor. And it's a very, very special thing. But remember that Shabbat must be observed. You don't even build the Beit HaMikdash on Shabbos. Shabbat is the eternal covenant between God and the people of Israel. What I got to thinking about was Shabbat is something that we kept with us throughout our history. The Beit HaMikdash, start with the Mishkan. The Mishkan started a year after we came out of Egypt, and it lasted 40 years, 39 years in the Midbar, and then had a few locations in Eretz Yisrael until a semi-permanent home was found in Shiloh, where it stood for 369 years. It was then destroyed, it was rebuilt in other places, and finally, 480 years after we came out of Egypt, 480 years, it was built in Jerusalem. Lasted for 410 years and was destroyed. 70-year exile, Beit HaMikdash rebuilt, stood on shaky ground. I say that because there are a lot of things missing from the second Beit HaMikdash, including the people. For another 420 years, and it was destroyed. Since then, it's close to 2,000 years, the Beit HaMikdash has not stood. Shabbat has been with us all the way. So people develop an attitude. Shabbat, kashrut, shul, those are the things that have never, that we have never been without. Mikdash. Yeah, I have a picture on my wall of Har HaBayit without the mosques and with the Beit HaMikdash photoshopped over Har HaBayit. Or I sing Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim. Or I have square of a wall next to my door that's unfinished, unplastered and unpainted. Zecher l'mikdash. Comes the Seder, and there on the Seder plate is a scrawny chicken neck or a chicken wing roasted on the fire. Zecher to the Korban Pesach. To the point where you say, when you get up to Pesach Matzah and Maror, you say Pesach. You don't even point to it. You sort of look at it. But you can't point to it, because it's not the Pesach. And you say, Korban Pesach, that our ancestors ate in the Beit HaMikdash. Matzah, she'onu ochlim, that we are eating. Matzah stayed with us. Korban Pesach went. But that doesn't mean that we're not lacking it. We have psychologically developed a philosophy to compensate for the loss of the Beit HaMikdash, for the loss of sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael, for the loss of living in Eretz Yisrael. And we have done so well that we're like that parents of that deaf girl, the deaf parents, who say, we don't want hearing, we don't need hearing.
You hear that from people. Beit HaMikdash, what, Korbanot? We should go back to Korbanot. Every day when they daven, they say, Sheyibana Beit HaMikdash Bimhera V'Yomenu. Do they mean it? They say it. But do they mean it? That's my point. My point is that reading three psukim this Shabbat about Shabbat is there for us to understand how significant Shabbat is, even compared with the building of the Mishkan. 119 psukim that talk about the fulfillment for the first time of build for me a sanctuary and I will dwell among you is not something that we should look at as a boring, doesn't mean anything. Rather, we should look at it with hopeful anticipation, prayerful enthusiasm and anticipation for the Binyan Bayit Shlishi, and realize that those parents were wrong for trying to keep their daughter from that operation. That a person, yes, Baruch Hashem, when a person is blind, it's not the end of the world. An amputee, it's not the end of the world. When you see inspiring video clips about a guy who has no arms and no legs, but you wouldn't believe what he's able to do, or a woman without arms who paints by holding the brush between her toes and does beautiful paintings and can change her daughter's diaper with her toes, you say, wow, thank God she's able to overcome her lack of limbs. But don't be foolish enough to say that it wouldn't be better if she were a whole person. Now, sometimes you need that in order to realize what you've been taking for granted. I understand that. But it still doesn't change the fact that we don't have everything we need for a complete Jewish life. Not in Borough Park, and not in Flatbush, and not even in Jerusalem yet, without the Beit HaMikdash. That's what these Sedras are trying to instill in us. The first chapter, after saying, when you read the Megillah, brings up the following issue. Karu et HaMegillah ba'Adar HaRishon. If you read the Megillah in the first Adar, v'nit abra hashana, and that year became a shana me'uberet, korinota ba'adar hasheni. You read it again in the second Adar. Now, first of all, this can never happen in our time. It happens in the time of Sanhedrin, past and future. It is not a normal situation for the following reason. In the time of Sanhedrin, past and future, a committee of members of Sanhedrin meet each year to determine whether a year will have one or two Adars. Whether the year will be a Shana Pishuta, a plain year, or a Shana Meuberet, a pregnant year with an extra month. That decision is usually clear, and no matter when they make that decision, they preferably have to announce it to the public in Adar. Even if a month ago, 2 months ago, from Rosh Hashanah time on, they knew that this year was going to be a Shana Me'uberet, they did not make a public announcement until Adar. The reason for that is that the whole point of this concept of an extra month has to do with making sure Pesach is in the springtime. Even though any time you add a month, that would happen, it would push Pesach a month later, it is most obvious, demonstrative, manifest, when you do it in Adar. When an announcement is made, the month after this one will not be Nisan, but will be another Adar, then you know the purpose is to push Pesach. So ideally, the announcement is made in the beginning of Adar, and then you know there's no Purim in this first Adar, only in the second Adar. Occasionally, there was a need to make an announcement earlier. I really don't know why.
but the announcement can be made as early as Rosh Hashanah. Before Rosh Hashanah, even if the Sanhedrin knows the next year is going to be Me'uberet, they don't announce it, and if they announce it, it has no effect. The effect is only not next year will be Shana Me'uberet, this year will be Shana Me'uberet. This year, the month after the regular Adar, will be another Adar. Preferably this month of Adar. The next month will not be Nisan, will be another Adar. Now it can happen that you have one Adar, you celebrate Purim on the 14th or the 15th, and now it's already the 19th, Sanhedrin will come out with a statement, the month following this one will be not Nisan, but another Adar. And everybody will go, what? We just had Purim. Mishnah, Korot HaMegillah Ba'Adar HaRishon. If you read the Megillah, meaning if you observe Purim in the first Adar, Vinit Abra Hashana, and the year turned out to have an extra month, meaning you heard the announcement was made after you observed Purim, Korin Ota Ba'Adar HaShene, you read it again, and you observe Purim again in the second Adar. Part of that reason is that there is a smichut, a juxtaposition between the geula of Purim and the geula of Pesach. They have to be a month apart. Actually, there's a different dispute. The Megillah says the Jews in all perpetuity shall observe Purim b'chol shana v'shana, every year. B'chol shana v'shana implies every year like every year. No differences. Well, we got a problem. We have two Adars. So what do you mean, b'chol shana v'shana? Some opinion said, after Shvat comes Adar, every year. Therefore, Purim is in the first Adar. The second opinion says, every year, Purim is a month before Pesach, including when there are two. Machloket. How do we paskin? We know that already. The second Adar is the one that gets Purim. And that's from the Mishnah. Immediately following is a Mishnah that answers the question that's in your mind, having heard what you just heard. Well, what's the story with two Adars? So the Mishnah says, Ein Bein Adar HaRishon La Adar HaSheni. There is no difference between the two Adars, Ela Kriyat HaMegillah Umatanot LaEvyonim, except for the reading of Megillah and the giving of gifts to the poor. Of course, we have to add to that Mishloach Manot and Seudat Purim and Al Hanisim and Kriyat HaTorah for Purim and Parshat Shkolim and Parshat Zohar and Parshat Parah and Parshat HaChodesh. So the Mishnah was not very inclusive, but basically everything that belonged in Adar got moved to the second Adar. But because the Mishnah says there is no difference between the two other than Purim and everything that goes with Purim, then there has to be some things that they are the same. So the question then is, what about a Yortzeit? So the Yortzeit, you can answer by saying, Ein Bein Adar HaRishon LaAdar HaSheni Ela Mikra Megillah. It's the same. If you have a 19th of Adar, you have two of them. And you observe both, because the Mishnah says there is no difference between the two Adars except for the Purim stuff. If you hold a Yortzeit in one month or the other, then you're making another difference between the two Adars. That would be an argument in favor of holding both dates for a Yortzeit.
All right, I guess I'm kind of jumping around and chopping up the recording from yesterday, but let's finish off with where I started, with what I said was going to be an overview of Vayakhel. Turns out we have 122 psukim, 122 verses. Three of them are a reminder of Shabbat. As we had in the end of the first portion of last week's reading, Ki Tisa,
a reminder of the supremacy of Shabbat following two and a third sedras that dealt with the building of the Mishkan. Here is the reminder again. 119 psukim go through, and it continues into next week's Pikudei, go through the building of the Mishkan as had been commanded back in Teruma, Tetzaveh, and the beginning of Ki Tisa. So even though the amount of Shabbat material and the amount of Mishkan Mikdash material are not balanced, three psukim in this week versus 119. In fact, in general in the Torah, there is more in writing about the Mikdash than there is about Shabbat. Nonetheless, our Torah is complete only in the context of a written word and an oral law, and the oral law covers Shabbat very well. On that note, let me wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.